You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
And Harry Potter, I was done. Maybe it had gotten to the point where I was like, I'm not going to book this. I haven't booked anything I've gone on in the last 6 months, 9 months. It had been a year and a half since my last Broadway show. And I was like, okay, fine. You know what? Screw it. I'm just going to do the work. I love Harry Potter. I think this is brilliant. I think the script is brilliant. I think I'm just going to do the work. That's it. And so I went in and I was like, there's no way I'm going to book this. And I did the work and I came in and just did the work to the best of my ability. Hey, welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. It's me, Roscoe, founder and host of Built for the Stage, an online training program that helps actors to train like athletes. Actors are athletes, so start training like one. If you want to try a free trial, go to the website builtforthestage.com, fill out your name and your email, and we'll be on our way with that. Okay, we have an exciting guest for you. As always, Built for the Stage fam in the house. James Snyder, who plays Harry Potter in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child on Broadway. We're so hyped to be chatting with him today. So welcome to the podcast, James.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
A little bit different setup for us today. This is our second video chat that we've had on Built for the Stage podcast. One was with an actor that was on tour. And now James is not on tour, but we all are socially distancing during this crazy time of the coronavirus. So we are doing a chat on Zoom. Our unofficial sponsor that will be calling us right after this to sponsor Built for the Stage. Oh man, thanks so much for taking the time to just chat with me during these crazy times.
Yeah. It's, I think I'm social distancing myself from my sanity.
Right. Things like this have really been helping me out though, is just communicating and talking with friends and family for sure. So times like these make us realize how much we need each other. We need that social interaction.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy to think my wife just last night, she was just, we every once in a while you just hit those walls and realizing this might go on for a long time and not being able to see family. My grandparents, her grandma, they're 89. And it's just like, you know, you don't have that much time. Time is precious. And this is like so clearly, it puts just so immediate how the immediacy of just wanting to spend time with people and be there and connect, especially family. Part of me was like, if I'd have known it was going to be this long, I probably would have picked up and, you know, gone to my parents' house or something like that, just to have another set of people, you know, around that are family that, you know, make it. Instead, we don't even hang out with our neighbors. We shouldn't hang out with our neighbors. You know, it's like, you want to just, you know, be there, but it's tough, man. And I think we're in it for the long haul.
Yeah. All right. Well, talk to me a little bit about your current show that you're in and will soon be reconnecting with.
I feel like I'm one of the lucky ones. I just keep saying that. Like, I have such an amazing job to go back to. I'm playing Harry Potter and Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. And it's the most spectacular play I've ever seen. And certainly the biggest, you know, show I've been in. It's like the highest grossing play in the history of ever. And the most award. I mean, it's like all of these impressive things, but at the end, and at the end of the day, everybody's heard of Harry Potter. He's like one in 12 people on the planet own a Harry Potter book. I bet that's gone up since all this has started. So it's one of those things where I'm so fortunate to be able to go back to a job I love and with people that I love. We were about to start our year three cast. So we had a year two cast. They go sort of by classes. And year three was about to do on their first day. It was going to be like the 16th of March. And on the 12th, they were like, okay, see you guys later. We had just finished teching the show with the entire cast. And the entire new cast. And they were like, great, okay, we're done teching. Go home. We'll let you know when we're coming back. And it was sort of one of those things. I feel really bad for the kids who, for the people who were making their Broadway debuts or who were just jonesing to step up. And also, like, it's weird. I never got to have a final show with certain people. Like, you know, you prepare at the end of a run, you sort of prepare for that last show where you're like, everything gets to be super precious and heightened because there's that, the emotional, you know, size of saying goodbye to the people that you've been working with for over a year. And
yeah,
I never really got to have that last show with, you know, John Roberts and Nicholas Padani and Bubba White. Like, all, there were so many people that I just never got to have those last moments with on stage. And so in a weird way, it sucks. And in a cool way, it's almost poetic that sometimes something's too precious to get that precious about it. And wow. Well,
you mentioned that 1 in 12 people are known to have a Harry Potter book. So
yeah,
the iconic nature of the character is definitely there globally. Did you feel any pressure going into the show to almost stay exactly true to who people know from the movies and book? Or did playing the adult version of Harry kind of give you a bit of freedom mentally to kind of explore who you feel Harry Potter is or was?
Yeah, having, you know, 19 years in between the beginning, or 19 years between the two stories gave me a lot of room because I was grown up. And then I also, you just have to trust that they, the director and the casting director and J.K. Rowling herself, who had to help make the decision, like, all know what they're doing. You know? Like, what's crazy is my uncle happened to be in town, and we were riding down an elevator in a hotel, just heading out, and my uncle was so proud of me, and he was like, some people got in, and he's like, hey, does he look like a famous person to you? And I've never gotten this in my entire life. And the one woman, the mom, was like, he looks like Daniel Radcliffe. And I was like, I've never gotten that before. And so it was sort of like one of those things where I was in the midst of rehearsal. Also, like, I think I tried to approach the whole thing in trusting that I was enough and I could do, just my general vibe is very similar to Harry Potter and Daniel Radcliffe or whatever. And so I was like, I just need to get out of the way and just try and be invisible. James, it should be invisible. So that meant just focusing, listening, you know, digging into backstory. Luckily I've had 7 books of backstory, to base, you know, when do you get to work on a show where you've got literally, I mean, hours and hours and hours and hours of films, plus pages and pages and pages, thousands of pages of books of backstory. So I made sure I read the books. And then at the end of the day, I put on the wig, which I have a wig and the glasses and the scar. And I went, oh yeah, I'm fine. Like, I'm telling you, you could dress my cat up in the outfit and you'd be like, oh my God, that's Harry Potter. I actually don't have a cat either, but you get my point.
Well, that's great. Thanks for giving us a little bit of that insight. When you're in such a role that is iconic like this and the play has done so well, do you feel, what I'm getting at is the fan base of Harry Potter is at another level. So just you saying like 17 years later and then you're like, oh wait, 19 years later, there's like that little pressure of like, everyone knows this story in person to the T. Like, I better be on this. Like, are there any certain things in the show that you tried to really make sure that you were spot on with what the character truly is known for?
Well, luckily I'm a fan of fandom, if that makes any sense. Like, I love it when people love things, and I love stepping into that world and just maybe it's because I love Star Wars so much, or you know, Dungeons and Dragons, that are, you know, Lord of the Rings, like anything with that much of a universe. Like, give me another universe so I can play and learn things about people and the way people are connected. Like, all of that sort of research is super fun to me. It's like I like being a sort of an imaginary world genealogist, in a sense. It was a little intimidating. I get really offended when people say they don't like, it's not canon, or I don't like the play. Like, there are these super fans that have issue with certain elements. And it drives me crazy because they're like, well, you know, his wand's not, that's not the wand. The wand in the movie was this. And you're like, you do understand that the movie was based on the books and the play is based on the books. And the play is a play written by a very, very good playwright who's prolific in his own right. And so it just sort of, I get super defensive now. People are like, this didn't make sense. And this didn't. And you're like, well, yes. But when you're looking at something this immense, you have to understand the process to put something like this together. And the sheer fact that it was mounted at all, and that it's as tremendous as it is, as it's spectacular as it is a miracle in and of itself. We've seen a lot more money spent for a lot less bang for the buck. So, you know, I try and ignore the haters, if you will. But it's all I can do sometimes on Twitter to just be like, go suck an egg. Like, go suck a dragon egg.
Dragon egg. That's funny.
You know, because it's just like, give me a break. But at the end of the day, like, I go to work and I'm an actor and I've been an actor for a really long time and I really, really love this story.
Yeah. I liked something you said earlier about you're enough when you were prepping for the role. And I tell that to my clients a lot, whether it's about fitness or their career in acting, of like, you have to realize that you're enough, you're worth it. What other times in your career, because your career has been amazing. You know, you didn't come into this like a couple of years ago. You've been at this a while and continually having success. What kind of lessons have you learned along the way? Maybe it is the lesson of you're enough, or maybe it was a failure. What were some like highlights in your timeline that really created you as who you are today as a performer?
I think that you are enough thing is still strangely present. Like just, it's one of the biggest battles I have that I still do, like still deal with, is like, am I enough? I had a lot of success, like right out of college doing TV and film stuff. I was in LA and I was just like, oh, I'm going to book a guest star this month. And I would, like, I think back to that kind of thing. I had no clue, but it was also like the height of the WB, like Gilmore Girls and all this stuff. So I'm 20. And all of these young, you know, it's like, I'm exactly what they need. It's just like, you know, that the young kid, you know, so it's like, I had all this
young, handsome, good looking kid.
Go on. But I came out and I booked Crybaby, which was my first Broadway show. And I was playing Crybaby.
May I interject? Because not only is Harry Potter filled with crazy fans, but like Crybaby is like one of those cult movies that like there's a special breed of fans that just obsess over that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it quite like those fans intersected with Broadway necessarily or short run.
Yeah. I don't know if they made the trip out to New York City to see it. Yeah. That might have been the problem. Maybe they need to go on tour. Maybe they did. Was there a national tour of Crybaby?
No, it was. There was an economic drop. It was right when the economy tanked in 2008.
Oh.
They were two to four cities shy of being able to put together, I think, a non-EC tour. I think they were aiming for a non-EC.
Yeah.
Non-equity tour, non-union, which is cheaper for them to do. Yeah. So it didn't hit the markets like they were hoping, because it really wasn't that big of a commercial success. Really quickly, we lost the composer of that, was Adam Schlesinger, who passed away from COVID related, issues, which is crazy at like 53, like prolific. He was working on, well, he had done a bunch of stuff for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and, was working on The Bedwetter with, Sarah Silverman. Like he had his hand in so many things. He was just so prolific and so brilliant and so kind. That's still one person that I just keep just probably three times a day, just go like, this virus. Like, I'm just like, it's just like, it sucks, man. So that was sort of one of those things where it just kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah. I derailed us. I apologize. So you come out of college, I want to say that, like, it wasn't that you were naive. Maybe you were naive in saying like, I'm going to book this guest role, and you did. I think a part of it is, I believe, speaking it into the universe. Like, I am who I say I am. I'm going to do what I say I do. And then a lot of the time it follows.
That's the craziest thing too, is like, so I did If Then opposite Idina Menzel, and that sort of really shot me forward in a huge way, because her amazing fan base sort of, I took a liking to me because I'm a goofball, I think. And so that really helped me realize I needed to be in New York given what I do. And but I think it just gave me the confidence, because me stepping into a musical theater room audition is much different than stepping into a, like a film thing. Cause I, for some reason,
that was one of my questions, not to interrupt. That was one of my questions I had for you. So yeah, please, just kind of riff on that with, how do you prepare differently from the movie to the TV to the play, the musical theater?
Well, I think with TV and film, versus stage, you know, I had a teacher that would always say it's a being conversation versus a doing conversation. I think on camera in film, there's a certain level of making the people come to you. So it's about being and that thought and that conviction, within oneself, but not doing anything too much with it. Cause then you're putting a little too much extra hot sauce on it. As opposed to theater, where it's like you have to make those choices and do the and take the actions to get to that in a different way, in a bit more of an outward way. And I think I realized, like, just me, given how I am and how I like to work, I was like, oh, this is where I feel comfortable in the doing of things. Cause I think, and this is where it lines up with Harry Potter, is Harry Potter's a fixer. He's a doer. He's a Gryffindor. And I'm very much that same way. I also just love to sing. So for me, musical theater auditions have so much more material usually. Also, like, think about how many things you got where you're like 32 pages of sides. Like, you're going in to audition for five different roles and something. And you've got to have the three songs and the this, and then you do like one scene and one song.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
But
I'm sure you had a ton of music for In Transit. to learn?
Well, that was crazy. Luckily, I worked with Kathleen Marshall, and was a huge a cappella nerd in college. I was in the SoCal Vocals at the University of Southern California. Talk about another time when fandoms didn't quite meet up. I was like, everyone loves a cappella, right? Like, all these college kids are going to come and see it. They didn't. So it's just really at the end of the day, it's about doing the work no matter what it requires. And you'll see the dividends and realizing that the work is the thing. With Harry Potter, I had a month to study for Draco Malfoy and I did the work. And then I got there and I did Draco's scenes. They're like, great, thanks. And I left and they're like, we're going to have you come back for Harry Potter. And I had 2 days to study for that. So I buried myself in my basement. Basically was like, babe, I need to focus and really do this. And what's crazy is my audition right before that was for Waitress the musical, to do the Dr. Pomander role. And I had worked my ass off on it and tanked it. I was like, I'm perfect for this. I want this, blah, blah, blah. And Harry Potter, I was done. Maybe it had gotten to the point where I was like, I'm not going to book this. I haven't booked anything I've gone on in the last 6 months, 9 months. It had been a year and a half since my last Broadway show. And I was like, okay, fine. You know what? Screw it. I'm just going to do the work. I love Harry Potter. I think this is brilliant. I think the script is brilliant. I think I'm just going to do the work. That's it. And so I went in and I was like, there's no way I'm going to book this. And I did the work and I came in and just did the work to the best of my ability and was like, that's it. And I left it all on the stage or on the floor of that rehearsal room and was like, okay, I don't think I booked it. Like they were so nice. They were like, I talked to the director. I did each scene once. That was it. There were a million people in the room. I was on camera. And it's like, that was great. Thank you so much. I was like, great. I talked a little bit about what books I had read and talked about my kids a little bit. And then I left. It took like 5 minutes. And I was like, no. And Jim Carnahan came out and was he said, I think he liked it. I think they really liked it. Like I've been sitting there. Yeah, I think they liked it. That's good. I was like, oh, okay, well, at least I did my best. And I left. And 3 weeks later, I booked Harry Potter. It was crazy. Like, it was one of those cases of it didn't matter if I was enough because the work was the thing. So I got over that enough conversation, which could have been my downfall. And rather than that, I did the work. It didn't matter if I was enough. And luckily, and this is something I battled with, but even with Harry Potter, when you ask taking over this role, it doesn't matter if I'm a good actor. I have the job. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm a good actor. Maybe I'm the worst actor. Sometimes I'll feel like the shittiest actor on the planet. And I'll be on this stage. And I'm like, I'm a joke. I'm a terrible actor. Okay. And then it's like, so what? So you have to do your job now. So do your job. And that's it. You know, and my job is to be up there, to be relaxed, to listen, to not have that ego and to do what I rehearse, tell the story. That's my job, you know?
Not so much. So with battling that imposter syndrome, it's not so much about what you are, a good or a bad actor, but it's why you're supposed to be up there. And your whys was you explaining what your role was to play with your colleagues on stage, what you were supposed to fulfill up there, not... Yeah. Judging what you are. Are you good? Are you bad? Are you
what I think I should be? Like, you know what I mean? That's just, it's a should, you know, I think that's one of my biggest issues. Like, I know, you know, Abraham Maslow, who's a big positive psychology guy, he says, what one can be, one must be. He doesn't say what one can be, one should be. And I realize I like exist in this should world sometimes that really, really doesn't serve me. So I walk into a film audition in Los Angeles and Adrian Grenier's there or whatever. And I'm like, oh, I should go home. That's what I should do. And I think of all the things that I should have done today or over the last year. Oh, I don't have the six pack. I don't have this. I don't have that, you know, and I'm not as good looking as these people. And really that doesn't matter. My job is to be authentic and tell a story. And that's it, you know.
Can you tell us a little bit more about those 6 to 9 months that you were in that dry spell and how you overcame it or didn't? Maybe you had some failures and slip ups along the way where you just kind of got off track. I think it'd be highly beneficial for a lot of our listeners, especially in times like now, of, you know, how you approached those 6 to 9 months of just having the well be dry.
Yeah. I'm really lucky. My wife is sort of like that foundation, that rock that sort of, I mean, keeps us going financially in these dry spells. And then, you know, being a dad sort of gives a larger purpose for me. You know, it was like all of a sudden, even earlier in my career, when my son was just young, like a newborn, my wife would be working and I wasn't working. And it's like, yeah, I had a shitty audition, but I finished the day knowing that I was a great dad. And that sort of put a lot of stuff in perspective of like, it just made me feel like a human and not just a weird actor. And so I think for me, it's about realizing that I'm a lot more than the jobs I have or don't have and trying to stay focused on that. And setting goals is super important too, where I was working on the house a lot, but it was like, great, I'm going to meditate. You know, 3 times a week, I'm going to work out 3 times a week. I'm going to read X, Y, and Z. I'm going to work on my voice. You know, I sort of made my list of bare minimums to be like, these are my bare minimum goals for every single day. And then if I hit them, great. Boom. I hit my bare minimum and I know that I'm taking even a tiny step forward. And if I don't, I plan my day and say tomorrow, I've planned. Now, I didn't say to myself, I'm going to crush it. I said, here's how I'm going to crush it.
Yeah.
Oh, boom, 8 a.m. This is the thing I'm not doing right now, to be honest, is like, I should put it into my calendar. Put it into my calendar. Set my alarm for 6 a.m.
Yeah. Yep.
There you go. And that's done. And then you do it every day. It's easier for me to do something every day than something 3 times a week, I realized.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you become habitual with the activity or whatever it is you're doing, it gets ingrained in you as being a neutral state. As humans, the body, we want to remain neutral and safe. That's like our caveman instinctive behavior. To not change, to be, you know, in this safe spot. And when you push yourself and go against that grain, I talk about this a lot in fitness, for that 2-3 week, maybe a month period, going against the grain, it starts to smooth out. And then it becomes neutral, then it becomes normal, and it becomes safe. And that's when you start to turn a corner on implementing good habits that stick. And I love what you said there about just like having a specific schedule and how you're going to do it. Okay, what you're going to do, cool. But how are you going to do it specifically? And I love what you said about you were a good dad or you were, you know, doing things with your family in those times. You were a human. I always preach on try to be a person that does theater as opposed to a theater person. So I really loved you saying that and sharing that. We have a couple questions here. We're on Zoom, for those of you listening on Built for the Stage podcast. One of them is, we're in this quarantine phase and Kelly's asking if you picked up any hobbies. What I want to talk about hobby wise though, I want to kind of half answer for you. You started this a little bit before the quarantine. Can you talk to us about your amazing TikTok game? Can you talk?
I'm failing at it. I all of a sudden, because I.
James, we need you now more than ever on TikTok.
It's because I don't have anybody. I'm like, I immediately was like, oh, I've got Jana. And I've got all these people around me that are brilliant and are inspiring. And then I'm like, oh, it's just me. I'm going to dance around, do a bunch of stupid dances. Yeah. TikTok game, man.
What's your favorite one you've done so far?
The wow, you can really dance. I mean, it's like, come on. I knew it was like hilarious. That's the thing is like, you just, that's why it's a dream job that I was doing was like, I get to do goofy things backstage with people that I love and then step on and tell a story that's like epic and gorgeous and beautiful and touching and spectacular and all that kind of stuff. So maybe I was looking a little too much without myself, you know, and I need to look within. You know, I was looking outward and all right. I'm going to do a TikTok. I'm going to do a TikTok tomorrow.
Yeah.
Get it back on. We're going to see what we can do.
I just posted, I have a liaison TikTok master down in Texas. She sometimes puts on my, Built for the Stage apparel and does a TikTok and, she sneezes. And then there's that recording of the guy saying coronavirus and her dog is right next to her and she somehow video dubbed her dog to automatically get this face mask over the dog's face. Maybe I'll have to hire you as an independent contractor to be a good artist.
Sold.
Another person asked about your trajectory on the show of your emotional scope and journey on a essentially 6-hour long show. Not only are you going through an emotional journey in a show, but it's technically two shows. So talk to us about like your approach, creating this character and story of how you plan to go from who Harry was at the start of this play, part one, all the way to the end of part two.
You treat every scene like it's, I don't think about the trajectory. We have 15 weeks of rehearsal. So for me, it was, you take it bit by bit. You take it scene by scene. What am I doing in this scene? You know, what am I accomplishing? And then you trust that the things and the way we've rehearsed it is enough, is the right thing to show the little pieces throughout of either Harry's growth or his downfall, the direction that he's going and the things that I hold on to and the things that I say that connect to other scenes also. So it's just knowing those mile markers that are important to hit and then trusting the script does that work for you in a lot of ways too. And rehearsal did that. So, just like in memorizing it, I took it scene by scene and I do my best to not know where I'm going next.
Mm.
Trust the words and trust the rehearsal that was laid in there, which informs the thoughts that I have, which inform the action, which inform the emotion.
I love that. I love to parallel things to fitness on here, of course, but it's like when I first start with a client and they give me their goals. And their goals are, you know, going to be achieved a year or 2 years down the road or whatever. But you can't look at that. You have to trust the coach who's writing the program, or in your case, the playwright writing the script. And you have to trust that the text or the fitness program, day by day, line by line, scene by scene, is going to take you to that end goal. So what I'm getting from you is just be where you're supposed to be at that time. And respond to what's been given to you. And as long as you're in that moment and responding, you will continue to just slingshot your way and bounce your way from one moment to the next until you're finally at that end moment. So, and that's the same with fitness. You can't be like, oh, you know, I want to get there right now. You got to take it session by session and take it bit by bit. Last question for you. Looks like someone, they really want to know how you started acting, how you got into acting.
Yeah. So I was in high school. Like, I was always a ham. I sang and liked to take the stage at talent shows and stuff. And then in high school, I auditioned for the musical in the spring. I played soccer in the fall, auditioned for the musical in the spring. It was Godspell. I ended up playing Jesus in Godspell my freshman year. So that was like, oh, that's cool. And then eventually around my junior year, I realized I could go to school for theater. I had no idea. Like, it didn't even occur to me that like theater was a major. I didn't know what I wanted to be. And then eventually I auditioned for some programs around the United States. So UCLA, USC, NYU, a couple other UC schools, UC San Diego. And I got into USC and at their BFA program, which had 12 people in it. And, so I said, well, I guess it was my first choice as far as schools went. And then the fact that I was in the theater program, okay, I guess I'll give this a whirl. And it was really at school that I found the why of acting for me, sort of the bigger picture of, how I could use acting to contribute to the world. I think that's a big important thing for a human being, is to make the world a better place, for the soul to be better. And, I found that at USC. And then I also knew that if I graduated without an agent or a manager or whatever, I might be a little behind. And so I started that search for a manager or an agent really early on. And I was in Los Angeles. So I landed a manager by the end of my sophomore year. So I started auditioning. And by my junior and senior year, I had started working a little bit, not a lot. And then by the time I graduated, I was already sort of off to the races. And I was really lucky that USC kind of let me. My grades suffered a little bit, but I don't think anybody cares that I got a B minus in acting. And so for me, it was the fun of acting and getting to sing, and the fact that people liked it and I liked it, liked what I thought I was good, you know, so that sort of reinforcement of what I was doing. And then, I would say what really made me fall in love with acting was really when I realized I can live the human experience and hopefully teach someone through that story, a way to exist more positively in their own life.
Cool. Man, thanks, James. This has been so good. Above and beyond my Zoom expectations. I hope you're finding joy over there. It seems like being a husband and dad brings you great joy. So I hope you and your family are staying safe and healthy.
You too, man. You too.
Any last shouts out to any of the listeners out there you want to give?
Well, yeah, you know, anybody who's a Harry Potter fan and who sees the show or who I know, which I see like Kim, we'll be back when it's safe to be back. And I'm really excited for that to be, and I'm very fortunate that that'll be. And then, of course, to the first responders and the people on the front lines, thank you so much for making that sacrifice. And we are doing what we can by staying at home and you know, supporting where we can also. So just a big thank you, and I will see everyone when I can.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks, James. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to Built for the Stage podcast. That's another great episode, once again, with James Snyder, BFTS fam, who plays Harry Potter and Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. You can find him on Instagram at TheJamesSnyder. Make sure you see some of his TikTok material on there as well. Makes me smile, makes me laugh. We're all about having a good time here at BFTS. Make sure you go to the website, BuiltForTheStage.com. If you haven't yet, follow us on Instagram at BuiltForTheStage. And until next time, it's me, Roscoe, signing off.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.